The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, Champions League drama. Napoli end happily, but City leave Italy bitterly with defeat at San Paolo. After their dreams at the big time, will City be reduced to appearing on Thursdays far away from the limelight? The pod feels a twinge of sympathy. Elsewhere, emptor caveat for Chelsea. Beware the buyer as Blues slump to yet another loss. And with Arsenal now the only side through, has the Premier League been taken down a notch or two? We hear from Sid in Spain. We check out your posts and tweets and preview the weekend's action. Lazio Juve, the Madrid derby and the Premier League. All that and more in Football Weekly Extra. Hi there. Thanks for joining us. On board the pod today, Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
Good morning, Paolo. Scott Murray.
Hello, James.
Hello, Scott. And Sean Ingle.
Hello.
Hi, Sean. It's been a big week. Big week of action. Champions League. Mentioned there, only one English team qualified so far. Man City in particular, runaway leaders in the Premier League. Cut down to size in the San Paolo. What does it mean about the Premier League?
Well, I think we shouldn't draw too many conclusions. We shouldn't be too hasty. I mean, after all, you know, Italy and Serie A have sort of struggled to get lots of sides through to the last 16 for several years. But I think it is. I think the first thing to say is City, if they go out, deserve to go out. They, you know, but over the two games against Napoli, they were, you know, the inferior team. They were thumped by Bayern. And really, for a team that have had so much spent on them and played so well in the Premier League, they've been very disappointing in Europe.
They certainly have. They can't even make chips at the Etihad anymore. It's all going wrong. The wheels are coming off. Did you not see the story? No chips at the Etihad at the weekend. Yeah, but they might have had their chips in the Champions League, curiously enough, because, you know, if Napoli go to Villarreal and win, then City are done. I have to mention, a lot of people have pointed this out, they did lose there, Napoli, in the Europa League last year, but that was a different Villarreal side. Your thoughts on Tuesday's game, Paolo?
The Tuesday's game itself was, I thought, a brilliant game. There was a point where I tweeted that, actually. I was getting quite involved, and I tweeted that if anyone wasn't watching this game, then they might be an idiot. Now, it transpires there was a great game going on between Manchester and Benfica,
United
and Benfica,
it,
as well, which I didn't see.
No, I wasn't watching it.
I did only say might. I didn't say they definitely are. But it was, it was, you know, it was a great game. And it was interesting because, I think people perhaps expected City just to be a bit more, I don't know if energetic's the word, a bit more explosive. It really just felt like City with this team who hoarded the ball. It was a great line, I believe it was in La Stampa, if not maybe one of the other papers, where they said, who is this Manchester team that we're seeing? Because they must be they must be speeding up the images of the Premier League games we're watching, because this team that we're seeing in front of us is moving slowly, thinking slowly, passing slowly. And it was. They really didn't seem to have those ideas. But every time they lost the ball, and they must have had like 65% possession in that second half, every time they lost the ball in that second half, Napoli just kept coming careering forward at them and could have had two, three more goals, I think, really. You look at Hart to make a great save from Lavezzi. Maggio sort of ran into him. Hamzik, obviously, at the post. And it got sort of open and end-to-end at that point, and Balotelli still nearly got one at the other end, and Aguero nearly got one. But I don't know. It felt like a big European night, the fact it was at the San Paolo and there were 60,000 people there and there were flares going off. It felt like one of those lost Champions League nights that we haven't seen for a while in Italy, and it was thrilling.
What did you make of Mancini's tactics playing Balotelli instead of Aguero? I mean, ostensibly, apparently, because he wanted to use his pace down the left with a view to opening up space for Kolarov. And Balotelli, you know, he scored his goal, but apart from that, he was very in and out.
It was interesting. I think the first half, actually, that worked for them. I thought that Kolarov and Balotelli, that was the area of the pitch in which City were getting the most penetration. It was the area in which Maggio really did look stretched, I think, defensively, although also because they were both coming forwards, there were opportunities there for Napoli on the counter, as there were on both sides.
And then he vomited.
But yes, I was going to say that. I didn't see that, and I watched the whole game, so they must have not shown it on TV, or if they did, I must have literally looked away for a second. But it was referenced in the Italian newspapers that Balotelli was sick. So clearly, in that regard, seems a strange decision to play him. And also, even though he had that chance towards the end, to leave things as they were for so long, I think the biggest surprise I had with Mancini wasn't his initial starting tactics, it was the fact that Aguero didn't didn't appear until the 81st minute in a game that they couldn't afford to lose. It was I just thought that was a bit bizarre.
Maybe he'd refused to get, come on before that.
In the end, though, they did throw the kitchen sink at Napoli, but you wish they had done it, you know, with half an hour to go rather than 10 minutes.
Oh, I don't wish that at all. I was quite happy the way it turned out, to be fair. Yeah, well, there were one or two questions also about the fact that if there's one thing you don't want to do against Napoli, it's give them a chance to hit you on the break, and that's exactly...
Yeah, I mean, the timing of the goals obviously hurt City. You know, Cavani getting that goal at the beginning of the second half was a real blow at a point when, you know, the end of the first half, City did have things a bit under control. They were, you know, again, hoarding possession in that way, and because they didn't need to score, it was or didn't need to score as much as Napoli did anyway, it was a much more comfortable position.
What are the pizza makers of Naples, you know, who are very serious about their pizza? What do they make of the suggestion that Balotelli going out with his girlfriend the night before, you know, you may have got sick from having a pizza? Although
I don't think there's any suggestion at all about that.
Well, there was in the English papers. That's
been
dismissed.
There would be in the English papers, wouldn't there?
I don't think anyone in Italy was particularly fussed about it.
Yeah, it's always Italian food, isn't it? Lasagna now.
I think the pizza makers of Naples are more concerned at the moment with making up new variations on pizzas named after Edinson Cavani, just like the biscuits named after Edinson Cavani, the coffee's named after Edinson Cavani, and the liquor's named after Edinson Cavani in that city now.
But wasn't there a problem with dodgy mozzarella? With the sewage in Naples?
No,
there
is an issue, and I don't know how. Has this been discussed widely? There is an issue with waste that certain organisations, which may have been controlled by the Camorra, the local mafia, were getting rid of waste, and sometimes it was extremely toxic waste in areas where they shouldn't have been, which may also have been farms where mozzarella was being produced, which is why if you can get a hold of an organic mozzarella, actually English mozzarella is not bad, buffalo mozzarella.
No, actually, I had a very good from Laverstock Farm the other day.
There
it's
you
delicious.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
And we should also mention
more cheese chat later. I did want to mention Nasri's pants on non-cheese related subjects. Did you see that? Nasri, when he was preparing to come on, he took his tracksuit bottoms off and he had an extraordinary pair of kind of Robin Asquith-esque love heart smalls. Did you not? Were you not struck by that? I was. Anyway, all right, let's move on to other things then. Yeah, you got to love Napoli, no?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about it is this for me, is that Napoli haven't been great in the league this season, and very specifically, actually this one game they didn't, because they had Lazio before and it was a big game and they did feel pretty much their strongest side of the weekend. But through most of this group stage, they've taken a view where a lot of their games directly ahead of Champions League games, they've fielded a weakened team. They've rotated. They've tried to keep things fresh for the Champions League. And it's very clear that while obviously getting back into the Champions League is a priority, they are embracing this cup run. And the way the city is embracing it as well, the team is embracing it. And they're saying, you know what, this is our most important thing this season is the Champions League, and let's enjoy it. Let's make it something brilliant. And what I guess was just an interesting contrast, and look, you know, let's not forget that City's matchday squad cost €350 million compared to €90 million for Napoli. So there's a huge contrast there in terms of what they both should be aspiring to. But I do think City have done the other way, where they've really said, well, the Premier League is the number one thing. And they thought they'd be good enough to do well in the Champions League anyway, but that's where their priority is, and that's where Napoli one is, and that's maybe what we saw a little bit.
I mean, isn't this a sign then maybe that Serie A's coming back a wee bit? And also that if English football is sort of on the cusp of going over the brow of the hill, that might actually be a good thing, because if all their teams are just awful for a few seasons, there's this sort of expectations taken over hope in the last few years. It doesn't seem to be fun for any of our sides anymore, whereas it did look as though it was fun for Napoli. It looked as though it was fun in Leverkusen. It was even fun in Milan last night. Whereas you watch a lot of the English teams in Europe now, and it's like it's jobs of work.
Win.
They need to win, and it's the end of the world if they don't win. Well, it might actually be quite a good thing if for a few years they stop winning.
Well, that's a very interesting point there.
I do think that's why the Champions League has felt more exciting this year, is because you've got the English teams aren't making a procession through it, and that's not. Go too far again, just in case, because, you know, in 2 weeks' time we could be talking about all four English teams are through and Napoli are out. That's a possibility.
Could be talking about seven English teams in the Europa League. Channel 5 would be delighted.
Yes. Even you might get a gig there, Jumbo, possibly.
Yeah. Had to ruin my moment. All right, Dirk says, am I the only Liverpool fan whose heart begins to ache every time I see Cavani play? He had a value of just 17 million. He's a target man with pace, touch, goals, great in the air and on the deck, and great value. He is like the bizarro world Andy Carroll. And of course, it's Liverpool who Man City face next. Man City, they've lost £197 million. They're not quite sure where they've put Carlos Tevez. Are they going to lose at Anfield as well?
Well, historically, they haven't had a very good record. They've They got thrashed 3-0 last season and lost 6 of the last 8. We know with the other two drawn, but of course this is a much stronger City side than, you know, the early, you know, noughties team that would go there and routinely get thumped. So they clearly need to get something to get their, you know, get things back on track, because, you know, if you lose two games in a row, suddenly that's in the divisions crisis that could appear in the squad. Well, you know what the English press are like, they will be focusing.
They'll blame
in on
Italian
things.
Food, you mean? Yeah, that'd be Mancini's chef is good. No, but Man City, Liverpool on one hand, they're unbeaten in, I think, was it 7 now? And they've just come fresh from giving Chelsea a bit of a knock. Do you think they have what it takes to
Course they've got what it takes. I mean, you've got to look at Liverpool's home record this season that hasn't been particularly impressive. Mm. They've had trouble breaking teams down. But if City come for them, it might actually suit Liverpool's counter-attacking play.
Mm. The only worry for Liverpool is they keep running out of steam in the second half of games. They just do it again and again and again. They were fantastic against Chelsea at the weekend in the first half, and then for some reason in the second half just stopped pressing all over the pitch, and Chelsea were on the whole with the better side. But this is why their home form has been so bad, because they've taken the lead again and again and again and let things slip. It's just very, very weird, and I don't think you can blame it all on Charlie Adam, which a lot of people seem to want to do.
Whereas City are kind of the opposite. They tend to start a little bit slowly and then come into games. So from that point of view, you expect
7-all.
7-all. It's a tough month, this, for City. Apart from their upcoming clash in early December with Bayern Munich, they also have Chelsea coming, a game away at Chelsea, and then Arsenal at home. Interesting. Chelsea, should we move on to them then? Ooh, 4 defeats in 7 now. And this is one that certainly could cost them, though. Now they need to win against Valencia
or draw
0-0. But what about this defeat?
Well, you know, adds to the pressure on Felix Braus. In my view, has always been that he will be given a bit more time, because even Abramovich, even the guy that, you know, is in the dressing room berating his players when they don't play well, you know, that supreme overlord at Stamford Bridge wouldn't be so rash. But, you know, if this continues and you have another 2 or 3 poor results, you know, who knows what he's capable of doing. I would say, though, that we talked about the media earlier. We do go through these phases. It was Wenger the start of the season, middle of last season. It was Mancini. People were saying, you know, was he good enough? So I think perhaps we need to settle down. But the key, perhaps, issue is that he is still not addressing the defence. A couple of goals were quite soft last night.
All right, and Alex clearly not the answer either, because he came in and they went from winning to indeed losing. One thing about Villas-Boas, which is different to, say, the situation with Wenger and Mancini, is the fact that he's only 34 and he's never had to deal with a situation like this before. On one hand, his composure has been remarkable in all these press conferences, because he must be wondering to himself, have I got myself in too deep? He's at a massive club, massive players, some of whom are older than him. He's got no experience of playing, and he's talking about how he's going to motivate them and inspire them. It's interesting.
It's certainly interesting when you contrast it with, and I apologise in a sense, because we always do these, inevitably compare him with Jose Mourinho just because they're both Portuguese and came from the same club. But it is such a different style. The way he came out after that game against Leverkusen last night, and he was asked about some of the decisions that maybe could have gone Chelsea's way that didn't, and he just said, well, there's no point talking about that now. It's happened. And he's so understated, I think. And I guess that was Mourinho's shtick when he came in. He's so arrogant and so over the top about himself that, in a way, it was like, oh, hang on, we've got to sit up and pay attention to this guy. Whereas, I guess maybe Villas-Boas has taken a very different approach, where it's been much more understated, and maybe that has cost him. I don't know. But I still think the bigger problem for Chelsea is just that they've got specific positions on the pitch where they really don't seem to be performing well enough. They've got problems at centre-back where they're too slow. And up front, yeah, Drogba scored again last night, and he's still got something, but he's getting on. And Fernando Torres has not lived up to what he's supposed to have done.
In Mourinho's first two seasons, you could have looked at each of his starting 11, and most of them probably would have been in the top 5 in the world for that position. Mm. I don't think you could look at Chelsea's side now and say that, you know, how many of those players would be in the top 5, you know, in their given position. Ashley Cole, yes.
Ashley Cole was awful at the weekend.
But how many others?
And has been for quite a few games this season, I think.
Mm. Mm. Have that.
But I'd still, okay, name me 5 left-backs better than him.
No. Okay. All I've said is that Ashley Cole is not very good anymore.
All right. That's okay. All. Now, for Chelsea, that must-win game against Valencia, who've just gone and beaten Genk 7-0. Midweek. We'll talk to Sid about that later on and what kind of danger they pose. But before that, this weekend, they're playing Wolves, delicate fixture that for both teams, you'd have to say, at the moment. Of course, when they met at Molineux, Wolves won in January, last time the two teams faced each other. Not saying that's going to happen this time, but
Wolves are playing a lot worse as well, aren't they? Wolves were in a lot better form, I think, than they are right now.
All right, and the other two are passing notes to themselves. What's up, Scott?
No, I was just trying to work out who's. But I lost the thread.
Oh, right.
And then, and then I was wondering who was playing Wolves this weekend.
Okay.
And then it dawned Chelsea. On me that you were still talking about Chelsea.
Still talking about Chelsea, yeah. Okay.
Sorry about that.
All right, shall we move on? One final thing then. Is it going to be a fresh chapter in the Stamford Bridge disaster thing this weekend, Wolves?
I don't think so, no. I think they'll win.
No.
The Chelsea have a very, very good record at home against bottom 10. Size of the Premier League, so I think they should probably win it.
Okay, Chelsea playing Wolves this weekend. Scott, your thoughts?
I think Ashley Cole will have a very good game.
Super. All right, now, the other team that we can file under disappointing in the Champions League is, of course, Man United. They'll probably go through unless they get beaten by Basel. But hey, Basel managed a 3-3 draw at Old Trafford. And what's the story anyway with United? City at least had the excuse of being in a really tough group. United's were supposed to be a pushover.
Well, it is a soft group, and I think as a result, Ferguson has rested players for certain games. Perhaps they have taken sides a little lightly. They were 2-0 up against Bale in the game. They drew 3-3. They haven't looked as fluent as you'd expect them to.
No Rooney this midweek. Why was that?
Well, he didn't train on the Tuesday, and I think he was just rested. Because United got a big game this weekend, and I think Ferguson thought he'd give Berbatov a go.
And he thought that would be enough, as you say, maybe a little bit undervaluing the opponents. Berbatov, who got a goal, but sorry, was he not offside for that?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, and has that nobody seemed to mention that Man United got a 2-2 draw, one of their goals of which was offside. It's not very impressive, is it?
Well, I mentioned on Monday's show, Benfica are on a bad side.
Yeah.
I think where United have what they normally do in the first group stages is win the home games comfortably against poor sides. They haven't done that this time, but they should still go through, I'd imagine. But it's a case of they could be facing the Real Madrids and Barcelonas of this world rather than the second place teams.
Yeah, they might be facing Apple Nicosia. Of course, they go through second. So, for any of that though. Newcastle this weekend.
I'm quite looking forward to it. I was looking through Soccer Base earlier. I don't think Newcastle won Old Trafford since the 1971-72 season.
No.
Even in the Keegan era where they were, the first Keegan era where they were great. They drew a couple of games, but they never were able to win there. I think it's a huge ask to expect them to get anything this time around. But you never know. United aren't playing particularly well. It could be quite a tight, low scoring game.
Hey. Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
Think back to August. Think back to the Udinese playoff.
Mm.
Yeah, the preliminary to get into the Champions League. And it seemed like the Gunners were on the cusp of going out of the Champions League. This whole kind of implosion at the Emirates. Players leaving. Wenger losing the plot, etc. Who'd have thought that they would be the team that's gone through first? And at this point, even possibly the only team to go through.
Yeah, I severely doubt they'll be the only ones.
I think there was certainly
some sense of that at Emirates Stadium last night. I think there were lots of Arsenal fans who feel like the team took quite a kicking at the beginning of the season and perhaps feel a bit vindicated at the moment. Although, it's still not flowing as well as past Arsenal teams have. That's the funny thing about it. The last few years, Arsenal have struggled with the Champions League group stages, but often during those group stages, they've played some much better football than we've seen in this one. I think against Dortmund last night, there was some good stuff. I don't mean to say that there wasn't at all, but I did think in the first half in particular, actually, Dortmund were on top for a while, and Dortmund were playing this pressing game. They were closing Arsenal down, and some of the players in the middle seemed to be struggling with it. I think Ramsey particularly struggled in the first half. Jovinho didn't seem to do well when people were right up on him. And it felt a bit like, maybe it was about about timing of the goals and when things happened for Arsenal, they were able to turn it around. A piece of bizarre brilliance from Alex Song. I mean, really, really wonderful piece of skill for that first goal. And actually, not even necessarily saying that it's out of character for what he's capable of as a footballer. I think he's an incredible player. He's come on a huge way from being a £1 million signing from Bastia. But he... he actually, I was looking on zonal marking today, that was the only pass he completed at all in the final third. So that tells you that he wasn't spending his whole game up there doing these things. It was a one-off. He happened to be up there, he happened to make this cross, and it worked. But I think Arsenal have played, some things are going much better for them. They're more solid at the back. But despite getting through this easily, it's not all quite there yet.
I mean, people obviously have talked about Van Persie, and rightly so. He scored 38 goals for 41 games. Van Marlen, though, his influence shouldn't be underestimated. I mean, the 10 games he's played this season, Arsenal have won 8 and drawn 1. The only game they've lost with him in the side was when at Liverpool, where they had a man sent off when it was still 0-0. And I've posed this on the blog before, but I mean, Arsenal fans must look at last season and think, you know, if Marlon had stayed fit, he played 5 games last season. If Van Persie had stayed fit, what they could have done. As it is, I think those two are kind of keeping a not entirely convincing side together.
I'd actually extend it to Song as well, because aside from that cross, I thought last night he was really hugely important in terms of breaking up play and in terms of what he does in front of the defence. And you notice it a lot when he's not there. I think the fact that the Cameroon didn't get to the Cup of Nations is a massive boon for us this year. But it's true, and I do think Vermaelen has been huge. At the same time, when Vermaelen goes out, you think, okay, it's going to hurt them, but they might survive a bit. At the moment, there is a fear, and you felt it last night when there was a moment when Van Persie just took a little knock and just limped for about 10 seconds but was fine. You could feel it all around the stadium, everyone going, oh, hang on, if he's not available, where's the goal going to come from?
It's pretty rare to see a big club that dependent upon one player. For all the good work done by others, it's absolutely extraordinary. The proportion of Arsenal's goals that are scored by this one man with his checkered injury record.
I think it's a concern at the same time as it's brilliant. I think obviously people were having the conversation last night on Sky Sports. They were, even if a lot of them were rolling their eyes and saying it's silly, there were people saying, can we talk about him in the same conversation as a Ronaldo or a Messi? Mm. You know, I don't know. You're talking about apples and oranges. They're very different sorts of players who do different things. But he's that important to Arsenal, certainly.
It's like Feta or Halloumi.
There you go. Yep. He is that important. He is that essential. And I think if he gets hurt, and his track record suggests that he probably will, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a massive problem.
All right, then. Now, a couple of other things on the Champions League before we start looking at the Premier League this weekend. And one of them is we have to talk a bit about that monster game on Wednesday night at the San Siro, Milan against Barcelona. It lived up to expectations, Scott Murray.
Yeah, it was a fantastic game. For a while, it looked as though it might end up like 5-7 goal thriller. Didn't quite get there, but it wasn't far off. It was a bit of a bizarre game as well, because Lionel Messi was fantastic. His pass for Xavi's goal was amazing, but on the flip side, he had a sort of Andy Carroll-esque miss from about 1 yard. The other thing was Milan were fantastic, I thought. I mean, they were clearly not half as good as Barcelona were, but they still played some lovely stuff. Ibrahimovic scored a lovely goal. Prince Boateng.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on with Kevin Prince Boateng, because for Milan, he's just been brilliant this year. Was he always this good and just nobody noticed, or...?
I think he was perhaps always this good, but Harry Redknapp didn't quite notice, just in the same way that he didn't notice Gareth Bale was particularly good until he suddenly, you know, switched to left midfield and became a great player.
But it's curious that Boateng was kind of floating around, you know, went down to Portsmouth there, and then kind of turned up at Milan in this bizarre loan deal where he was actually bought by Genoa but then loaned to Milan. It didn't seem like he was a big signing, but he's been, I think, absolutely fundamental for Milan.
I think they've liberated him in a certain way. I think they've allowed him to be that player behind the attack with less responsibilities and said, you know, go and enjoy yourself. And he's one of those players who, when he starts enjoying himself, does brilliant things like we saw against Barcelona. And perhaps
that goal was just, was that the goal of the midweek?
Best one I've seen, I think, probably. It was a very, very nice goal. I think that's it. I think for a lot of his career, because he's big and strong, people have gone, well, you know, you need to get involved with tackling people and doing that sort of lark. Whereas Milan have maybe been a little bit more relaxed, just said, hey, go and do your thing. But I do think the approach of Milan last night was just generally interesting, because after the first leg, you know, you'd have thought 2-2 at Barcelona, it's a pretty good result. I keep calling it the first leg, for the first group game.
Mm-hmm.
Berlusconi famously stopped by the team and said that was, you know, I was disappointed last night. That wasn't a performance da Milan. That was, you know, that wasn't a Milan-worthy approach. Yeah, because he said they'd been too defensive and they hadn't played in the style that he expects, the sort of attacking, expansive style. And I think this was a response in a way. You know, they came out and said, fine, we're going to try and play Barcelona toe-to-toe. I wonder if they would have gone for the same approach had this been a two-legged game and they had that 2-2 draw and actually it was a knockout contest rather than one just to determine who finishes top of the group.
But at the same time, there was a bit of needle there as well. I mean, a number of times Messi was tripped and kicked and buffeted and barged. I mean, it wasn't an exhibition.
Busquets as well. I thought it was terrible. So many times I saw him lying on the ground after some awful crunching tackle. The poor chap.
Actually, it was also interesting. Liverpool fans might want to note that on loan, alabaster midfielder Alberto Aquilani has turned into like the next coming of Billy Bremner. He was just hacking people down all over the place. He should have been sent off about four times.
But in terms of the needle, it's obviously worth mentioning that this is the game that came just after the release of Zlatan's autobiography, featuring all sorts of less than complimentary statements about Pep Guardiola and calling all the Barcelona players a group of schoolboys, which, of course, many of them might actually think is almost a complimentary, because really what he's saying is they're all very well behaved in training and listen to their coach.
Yeah.
But extraordinary book, that, by the way. I hope they do an English translation, because I think it's...
Apparently it's on the way. They're doing a Dutch one too.
Yeah, it's...
So, listeners, if you don't speak English, don't worry, there is... Dutch edition on its way.
I've got it this week, and one of the lines I thought was interesting ahead of this game, and in a way he did his part. Was there's a line in the middle of it where he just says, my entire career has been based on revenge, and he actually says that this in response to a point of Inter where he's being whistled by the fans, and he says how this motivated him, basically being whistled by his own fans was great because that meant he could have a go at them. And you know, maybe even though Milan didn't win, maybe he thought he was, you know, from what I've seen, he was pretty good last night.
He was, yeah. Scott said he scored a goal. All right, well, let's find out a little bit more about the Spanish reaction to that game and much, much more as we dial up Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, James. I'm here. How are you?
Excellent. Very well. You're what, in the back of a taxi or something exotic like that, are you?
Yes, I am. Right. In fact, I'm going past the Bernabeu as we speak. The Bernabeu looks quite nice this morning in the sunshine.
Lovely, lovely. Feel free to lean over and give directions to the driver while we're chatting. But
I'm worried that I might have to because he's not 100% sure where we're going.
All right, okay. Where are you going?
It's one of these things that happens in James in Spain where you get in a taxi and they ask you where you want to go and you say, and they say, and how do you want to get there? Yeah. And I always think, well, did you do the knowledge? I mean, you tell me.
Well, no, it's an interesting question because, of course, taxi drivers in foreign cities, you know, there is always that impression that they might be taking a route that might be advantageous to them, but not necessarily to you. But anyway, let's skirt over that issue before we enrage taxi drivers the world over and ask you instead the reaction in Spain to Wednesday's terrific match at the San Siro.
Excitement and enjoyment, I think, more than anything else. I mean, there's a very slight sense that ultimately probably didn't matter that much. Now, I know that's going to sound ridiculous because I think first place in the group will be significant in terms of who you avoid in the next round. But I think there was a sense that, you know, Barcelona and Milan will both go through come what may. So in that sense, there was, I think, a kind of sensation of enjoyment more than anything else.
The Spanish, who spend so much time being rude about the Italians and using the epithet Italian football as probably the worst insult in their lexicon, are they having a bit of a rethink at all after Milan's performance?
Napoli's. I'm glad you threw Napoli in because that kind of ruins the answer I was about to give you.
Okay.
But sod it, I'll give it to you anyway.
Yeah.
Because there's one very strange kind of exception to the Italian rule as far as the Spanish concern, and it's always been Milan.
Oh, okay.
They always have had this sense of Milan as being that bit more exciting, that bit more creative in the way they play, more fluid. I mean, just looking at the names of the players they've had over the years, there was a huge, obviously, I mean, this is stated in obvious way, but there was a huge amount of respect for the Rigo Sacchi team, even some of the defensive stuff that the Rigo Sacchi team did. But Milan have always been, I think, treated ever so slightly differently. And actually, that argument about Italian teams is an argument that I think falls down with every passing week. But it's difficult to completely get rid of those prejudices.
How very true that is. Now, I wanted to ask you as well about the other two sides. Well, Villarreal, of course, are still technically in the competition, but Valencia and Real absolutely pouring the goals on. What was it, 7-0 for Valencia against Genk?
Valencia, and the great thing about the Valencia game from a purely Spanish point of view was Roberto Soldado again scoring goals. And this has become, I think, this is going to be the one big point of debate and maybe irritation surrounding the Spanish team going into the European Championships, whether or not Del Bosque takes Roberto Soldado. He still hasn't taken him to the squad. And it does look like there's some kind of problem because Soldado is just scoring so many goals that you do start to wonder. And of course, you know, let's look at this from an English perspective for a moment. Of course, the player that would lose out if Soldado, or probably lose out anyway if Soldado was to get the call up for Spain, could turn out to be Fernando Torres.
Absolutely. But Fernando Torres is going to be next up, or at least his Chelsea is next up for Valencia in the Champions League. Can Elche knock Chelsea out of the Champions League?
Well, it's interesting because last night during the game, as you can imagine, Spanish TV was showing Barcelona, Milan, but chopping backwards and forwards to the Valencia game and also keeping an eye on the score from the Chelsea match. And their response when Chelsea got beaten was that's really, really bad news for Valencia because it would mean that they have to get something out of Chelsea in the final game. And I think most people know that 0-0 doesn't put them through, but a score draw or a victory would. So they need to score, basically. And there was a feeling that was really problematic because it put them in a more difficult position than they expected to be. Now, of course, the reality is they might have been in that position anyway because the likelihood is that the Bayer Leverkusen would have gone and beaten Genk in the final game anyway. But certainly there's a belief that Valencia can get something out of Chelsea. And I'd say I think that may well be true. I mean, I don't see a huge amount of Chelsea, but what I've seen of them, they still look pretty vulnerable to me, and they still look like the kind of side that Valencia can cause problems to. Bear in mind that Valencia also, it's quite difficult to judge Valencia because they change from game to game because they have a coach who's very, very tactically minded. So every game is slightly different in terms of the way they approach it. If Valencia have everybody fit, and I think they won't have Epenega back, I think, by then, which is a real problem for them. But they're certainly good enough to cause Chelsea problems.
All right, then. And lastly, then, Sid, Real Madrid scoring bundlers of goals with their B team, the papers were pointing out. They've got the derby coming up this weekend with Atletico.
Yeah, and we all know what happens in the Atletico Madrid derbies. There was a great comment from Diego, who, of course, is a new arrival at Atletico Madrid. And it was something along the lines of, this is a big derby and we have to prove we're Atletico Madrid. Or words to that effect, I can't remember exactly what the quote was. And I thought, well, if you prove you're Atletico Madrid, what you mean is you're going to capitulate pathetically. Because sadly, that's what happens every year. It's 12 years now since Atletico Madrid last beat Real Madrid. When they went, they were relegated the season they beat them. They came back up. Since they've been back in the first division, they haven't been able to beat them. And every time there seems to be this kind of enormous mental block, and they're just unable to get their minds right against Real Madrid. And if you add to that the other fact, which is the bottom line, you know, sometimes we overanalyze, and the bottom line is they're just nowhere near as good as Real Madrid now.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Couple of other things, yeah, etc. One is Arbuel, or which I think is pretty close to the actual pronunciation in Cyprus. As all media outlets have covered, they are the first Cypriot side through. Terrific game there, interrupted by a little bit of flares and stuff and fog coming in off the Zenit fans, who apparently are idiots, according to one Zenit player. An interesting comment. Iliades posting in saying, yeah, incredible story. I presume he is an Arpoel fan. He says, a club with a turnover of far less than I would dare say every other club to qualify for the final 16. In Cyprus, they have a tendency to be on the lucky side of questionable calls and decisions by referees. One of the best defences in European football. It's true, they never concede, do they? Well, very rarely. The back five, plus the four alternative defensive options, so the nine defensive go-to guys, are on a combined salary of less than £50,000 a week, says Iliades. That's extraordinary, if true, and I have no reason to doubt that it would be. But he or she goes on to say, in the Cypriot press, word has circulated that the team is receiving 50% of all Champions League prize money. Now, if that wasn't an incentive for a bunch of guys on fairly meagre wages, then I don't know what is. apart from, what, 51%, he then goes on to say, that would be more of an incentive. Brilliant. Thanks very much for that, Ilya. The other story, I mean, well, great, round of applause for... Yeah, well, you don't... I didn't mean literally, but there you go. Let's. Why not, literally? Lovely. The other story, can we get a round of applause for Joe Coles Lille? Who expected them to go to CSKA Moscow, plastic pitch, Luzhniki, etc., 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 and get a 2-0 win, a French team?
But CSKA Moscow haven't been very good at all this season. It's not as big a shock as you'd think. Lille haven't played well at all in the Champions League, so it was about time that they showed up.
That doesn't make any sense, Shawnee.
No.
Come on. You can't have it both ways. CSKA haven't been doing so well, so it wasn't a surprise, and Lille haven't been doing so well, so it's about time that they showed up.
Yeah, but Lille, though, I think people had expectations for Lille before the... Before the competition began with Hazard and others, and they've disappointed. Well, I think I'm just saying that CSKA Moscow are playing much to as you'd expect.
Oh, okay. Well, if Lille beat Trabzonspor now, because they're still third, the Frenchies, if they beat Trabzonspor in their final game, which is at home to the Turks, then they will go into second place and go through French side in the last 16. No wonder Barry Glendinning's gone into hiding. Anyway,
Barry?
Nobody knows. With Carlos Tevez partying somewhere. Where is Barry, Sean? Do we know?
I imagine he's in his usual haunt. Haven't had 2 weeks holiday, probably.
He's had 2 weeks holiday?
Yeah, he's on a break.
Nothing more sinister.
No, a much deserved break.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Do you know where he went?
I imagine he's staying at home.
Right. Why, Scott?
Just interested.
Okay.
He doesn't phone you anymore, doesn't text you anymore.
Oh, Baz has left me behind long ago.
He's got his Twitter friends now, hasn't he?
That's it. He's all about Twitter. Yeah. He doesn't have real friends. He just has virtual friends.
Like
Sam Matterface and Lukey Moore.
Yeah.
He doesn't need Scott and Shawnee. I can tell you that for nothing.
How long have you known Barry, Scott? Must a decade or so.
I don't like to think about it.
You gave him his breaking here, didn't you?
I don't like to think about that either.
I remember you sort of demanding that Barry works for the 2002 World Cup. And this is how he repays you?
This isn't making me look good at all.
No, I think it does, actually, Scott. You were there. I can imagine this as a biopic one day. You know, the early years. That's fascinating.
GU, the early years.
Yeah. All right, then.
Yeah.
Producer Ben wants to know who plays Barry. There's so many options. Cole Meaney, do you think? Morgan Freeman. Yeah, top marks, producer Ben. All right, well, let's move on then.
Danny Dyer could do it if he doubled up his accent.
All right, now we're all giggly.
Proper Baz.
Proper, yeah.
Producer Ben now thinks that listeners should suggest who should play not just Barry, but pod members, yeah, in the film, the soon-to-be-made and then released and enjoyed film GU the early years.
It's a shame where Telly Savalas has long gone, isn't it?
The bloke out of Montalbano, there's so many options for me. The puppet they used for Hook in Thunderbirds, so many options. I'm wondering how we're going to do Marcelo Moro Araujo. That's the tricky one. Now, all sorts of other things going on this weekend in the Premier League. A couple of things in Europe as well. Lazio-Juventus, that's huge, isn't it, Paolo? Because they're joint leaders at the moment.
It is. Juventus have had this incredible start to the season because they're still unbeaten. And they're joint top, but with a game in hand. So that's some indication of how quickly they've taken off under Antonio Conte. And, of course, they have the benefit of not playing in Europe at the moment, which is standing them in good stead.
That's very, very true. Miroslav Klose is back for Lazio, so they say. He's scored 6 goals. What about Quagliarella? He's fit now. Why can't we see him play for Juve, Paolo?
I think the main reason we can't see him play for Juve at the moment is because the players they've got out there are doing a very good job, and in particular Alessandro Matri, who was the guy who I think a lot of Juventus fans really treated as an afterthought when he arrived in the January transfer window. Quagliarella had got off this amazing start to the season, then he got hurt, and everyone really wanted Pazzini, who ended up at Inter. And when Matri arrived on the last day, a lot of people really turned their nose up at it. They were like, you know, who's this guy? He's only been at Cagliari. He hasn't done anything special in his career.
Looks like he wears eyeliner.
But he's been brilliant. And I think he's not only forcing himself doing well there, he's actually forcing himself into contention for the Italy team as well now.
Right. An Italy team slot that's currently occupied by another player that people turned their noses up. to when he first arrived, but who has been quite equally brilliant. And I'm talking about that man, Osvaldo, down at Roma. We did mention briefly his disallowed, tragically disallowed, beautiful overhead kick at the weekend, just to say that Udinese are hosting Roma this Friday. So if you fancy a bit of Friday football, I trust that's on Udinese-Roma. That'll be a cracking game, that. Mm. Two good footballing teams. Let's move on, Sean.
Oh, quickly, I was going to ask. I went to my first game at Olimpico was back in 2001. Lazio-Juve, it finished 4-1. Davids was sent off. Neves scored a cracker. Del Piero did as well. Zidane, I remember, you know, seeing him for the first time in the flesh and just being amazed just how brilliant it was and how he actually he didn't stop running. But I remember at the time how difficult it was to get a ticket, and you know, it was just queuing up and the shadowy people we had to speak to pay over the odds. But I've noticed this season watching Serie A, there's been lots of empty spaces, even the Rome derby. Now, will this weekend's game, do you think, be an absolute sellout?
I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't. Lots of games aren't at the moment.
Roma-Milan wasn't a sellout at the Stadio Olimpico. Even the derby's not a sellout these days.
No, and you know, it's a big stadium. It's, you know, it's not like you're talking about selling out 40,000 or 50,000. You're talking about selling out 80,000. I don't think it'd be a sellout. You know, and the problem is sometimes as well, I do think that gets lost in that. I think, for instance, the Napoli-Lazio game, a lot of people looked at and said, oh, you know, they can't even sell out a big game like that. There's still, I think, more than 40,000 people at that game. It's still a significant crowd. It's just not entirely sold out. And actually, I think worth noting that while I'm sure the attendance probably went down officially, is still a full house, because it always seems to. At Emirates Stadium last night, for even a game against Bayern Munich, I saw quite a few empty seats at the top of the stadium there.
Borussia Dortmund.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But Juve, six straight sellouts this year in the new stadium, just to mention that, six straight sellouts. And also should also mention economic situation in Rome, not the best at present. Just going to move on, though, you know.
Berlusconi would disagree with you, of course.
Yeah, yeah. They're all in restaurants rather than at the stadium. Paris Saint-Germain taking on Marseille. That's a big game. Very big game. Of course, traditional rivals, big spending Paris Saint-Germain. Lead second place side Montpellier in Ligue 1 going into the weekend. And Marseille are all the way down in 10th place after a bad start. But if they win this game, they'll be happy, won't they? Paris Saint-Germain, a huge game. Of course, you've got your Pastore, you've got all sorts of things there. So that'll be interesting in a big weekend in Ligue 1. Now, the Premier League, meantime, a couple of things to talk about here. First of all, Spurs, who played since our last pod. They won 2-0 at home to Aston Villa on Monday night. You all know this, of course. They went into third place in the Premier League with a game in hand. Harry Redknapp, freshly back from hospital, says, we can win the title.
Well, I think that's pushing some, but I think you do have to give Spurs an awful lot of credit. I think it's helped that Bale has stayed fit. I think it's an enormous advantage that Adebayor, who was again excellent on Monday, has played. We talked at the start of the season how I think last season Spurs' top striker, none of them scored more than 4 goals between them, Defoe, Pavlyuchenko and others in the league. I think this will be a good test, because I think with long back for West Brom, they're a much stronger outfit. However, they have lost all 4 of their matches against teams in the top 7. And you would, you know, Spurs are odds on favourites for the game.
Mm. At the bottom, meanwhile, other teams in trouble like the Baggies. Stoke, they're only 3 points off the drop now. They've absolutely plummeted down the table. They've lost 5 games of their last 6 in all competitions. What's happened at Stoke?
I think, again, it's just maybe some of the same thing we talked about with Napoli earlier in the show. If you've got a team that isn't necessarily built for the demands of playing in multiple competitions, and maybe the Europa League has taken its toll a little bit on that squad.
Mm. Well, they are playing Blackburn this weekend, so that might offer some solace. And cheer up, Blackburn fans. Steve Keane hasn't been offered a new deal. They just retouched his wages a bit, but that was a bit of a scare story, wasn't it, when they said, oh yeah, we've given him a new deal. Why would you give him a new deal at this point? I mean, maybe don't fire him, but bring him a new contract. Very curious. Mystifying. Anyway, Stoke against Blackburn. Also, teams in trouble at the bottom. Bolton are hosting Everton. Everton, of course, got the win last weekend to move clear of danger, but they could find themselves right back in it were that game to go badly. Do you think it will?
It shouldn't do for them.
But for Everton, really?
But it's a fairly unpredictable one, and as much as the Bolton spend most of the time getting stuffed at home this season, or winning by 5 goals or whatever it was they did, and Everton are, you know, as good as unreadable, I think.
All right, fair enough. And what about Sunderland Wigan? That's as good as unwatchable, probably, is it?
Well, I wouldn't like to say that.
Right, James. Although Wigan's back line are doing terrific things for football as an entertaining product, aren't they? Are they not? I mean, they're a curious bunch, aren't they? And most people would say destined for the drop. What catches your eye? You'll be at the Fulham game, will you, Paolo?
I'll be at Arsenal Fulham, yeah, right. Obviously. But then I...
Right. All right, well, apparently, according to producer Ben, that's pretty much all that we've got time for today. But I do look forward to reviewing Norwich against QPR. Ooh, that's a bit of a sizzling battle of newly promoted sides. And indeed, the other freshly up from Championship team, Swansea, who are hosting Aston Villa, Agbonlahor and Bent, in a game which Alex McLeish would love to win because his record of late hasn't been too good. They're still eighth in the table, though, of course, Villa. All very interesting. Now, we'll be back with reviews of all of that then on Monday. Before that, Friday morning, we'll see a fresh review of the European papers, or the Guardian's website, or the iTunes store, indeed. Do drop by if you fancy a bit of that. Otherwise, have a super weekend, and we'll speak to you on Monday. Many thanks to you all.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.